Welcome to the first in a special series of podcasts from CPR. They're called Vox Talks Climate Finance. My name's Tim Phillips. Welcome to my co-host Elisa of Imperial College in Cornell. Elisa, hello.
Hi, Tim.
This was your idea, Elisa. I can't claim the credit for it. Why are we doing a podcast specifically about climate finance, and why are we doing it now?
Up to today, emissions are still rising, and we know that that will lead to more warming than is safe for mankind on this earth. Finance can play an important role in the transition to a carbon neutral and sustainable economy. So in this podcast, we hope to cover the various ways in which the financial sector can be integral to the climate solution.
You have assembled a great team of guests for our first episode. Who are we going to be talking to?
Today, we will be talking to Professor Patrick Bolton. He is Professor of Finance and Economics at Imperial College London. And we will also have the pleasure of talking to Viral Achara. He is a Professor of Finance at NYU. And we will be talking to Stefano Giglio. He's a Professor of Finance at Yale University.
Elisa, I should also be asking you, what do you study when it comes to climate finance?
I study how we can align financing flows with the transition to a carbon neutral economy. Not enough finance has flowed to emerging and developing market economies for them to transition away from fossil fuels to renewable sources. So my research is all about how can we generate climate finance at scale.
We're going to be talking about all sorts of these things over the coming weeks. But what is our plan today, Elisa? What's on the agenda?
The big question we hope to answer, at least in part, is whither climate finance? Or in other words, where does climate finance go from here? What do our panelists study? And what are the significant insights that have emerged from their research? Second, what are the big gaps and what are the big debates taking place right now? And where might climate finance go from here?
Excellent. Well, let's get on with it. Patrick, I'll come to you first. What is the focus of the work that you're doing?
The 21st century will be the century where we either are able to get to grips with the climate crisis or we are not. And it's the fundamental issue of the 21st century. It affects everything and it affects finance. And therefore, what are the finance implications of climate change and the climate change challenge? My research has focused on transition risk. If we are going to get to grips with the climate challenge, if we are going to be able to control the climate crisis and mitigate it, then we will have to do a drastic, radical transition in our sources of energy use from fossil fuel-based economies to renewable energy-based economies. And that has to be done on a global basis. That is what is behind net zero by 2050 and so on. This transition is going to be extremely difficult, extremely messy, and involve huge risks. Finance is about pricing risk. This is a rising risk. How does finance understand this risk? I've also been interested in what other people have described to be the problem of climate finance, but I think it's far too narrow a definition. And what they have in mind is that what climate finance is funding the transition. It's just a funding problem. But I think that's very narrow. Nevertheless, if we're going to do the transition, we're going to have to fund it. Where are the funds going to come from? How are they going to be deployed? That's a whole other agenda.
Viral, the same question to you. What is it that you study?
When I was at the Central Bank of India during 17 to 19, I was in charge of monetary policy research, which already was a new ballgame for me. I'm a financial economist by training. But as I started learning more about inflation and potential output gap calculations, and at the same time, I was observing the kind of especially physical hazard shocks that were hitting India, notably extreme heat temperatures over the summer, drought and low levels of reservoir in very important farming states of India. It gradually started dawning upon me that understanding climate change and its implications for prices, as well as potential output and output gaps is very important going forward for monetary policy research. If it means higher prices, at least in medium term, not just food, but it could also be fuel, I think, because as Patrick was explaining, a transition will most likely take time until we have significant enough advances in renewables and storage in order to keep energy prices low. So I think there's a potential direct impact on inflation. It's also an impact, I think, on the ability to generate output. I think in the long term, we think we are moving to a better place if we have the right climate change policies in place. But if we don't, or even if we do in the medium term, I think there are some implications for potential output and output gap. So when I left the Reserve Bank of India, I said, okay, I have to think about this. I don't know anything about it. And I must confess, I'm relatively new to climate change. So I said, I have to learn about physical risks from first principles. How is the warming up of the planet manifesting itself as a variety of different physical risks? So I'm trying to learn about them almost from first principles, just learning about them from the standpoint of incidence, their clustering. Mm-hmm. But then I'm interested in the economics and finance questions. Okay, how does this then impact the local economies, house prices, small businesses? Because then you could start thinking a little bit also about how it impacts the financial sector. Transition risk issues are crucial, especially on energy prices and the inflation that it can cause, especially in emerging markets, but now as we are seeing, perhaps even in advanced economies. Are there risks of lower supply in traditional fuels, but lack of storability of the new fuels, making it difficult to manage the energy prices well? And then are corporations trying to mitigate some of these risks? If they are energy companies, are they trying to adapt to them in a manner that can reduce the impact when the climate shocks materialize? What kind of commitments are they making? And are they then walking the talk? I think climate change policy is fundamentally a macroeconomic policy. I think it has deep bearings on inflation, output, industrial policy. And of course, it's going to be inevitable that in one way or the other, availability of finance plays a role. But I think it also has the potential at some point to be important for financial stability. And I'm just trying to connect the dots, starting up from first principles along these lines.
Stefano, what do you do? Is it similar to the work that Viral and Patrick do?
Actually, I come from an asset pricing background. And so really, for many years, what I've been thinking about was how investors share and manage aggregate risk, especially. About 5 to 10 years ago, I moved to think about climate change as a very important macroeconomic risk. Like aggregate risk, it's a global phenomenon. Finance asset pricing especially gives us tools that are very useful to think about the risks and uncertainties. What I've done in my research is I explore very complex phenomenon from different points of view. So I started by thinking, how do investors face this risk? How do they tilt their portfolios in order to be better hedged against this risk? How do we use the instruments that we have in financial markets to transfer this risk around optimally? And this, of course, connects very deeply with the question of how markets are pricing climate risks. Do they realize this risk? Do they realize which assets are more or less exposed? And do they want compensation for these risks? Also, how investors perceive these risks. So I've been running surveys, for example, of investors trying to understand what are their motivations to think about this. Are there ethical motivations? Are they thinking they want to hedge this kind of aggregate risk? Are they just purely motivated by return considerations? We've been running surveys and linking the surveys to what investors are doing in their portfolios, trying to understand what drives this push from financial market participants towards the climate transition. Two more examples of things I've been exploring. One is, how much do we want to invest today in mitigation investments that are going to accrue benefits very far in the future? So when you think about this problem, then immediately comes to mind that you have to think about how do you discount to today the benefits of these investments that are going to come very far in the future. How do we think about benefits 50 years from now, 100 years from now? And then finally, the connected risk, which is biodiversity risk, which maybe we'll talk more about in the future, but it's a related risk.
To be able to do the work you do, how much of a climate scientist do you need to be? Viral touched on this, but how much of that knowledge do you need, Stephanie?
So I think it's very important that you have a relatively deep understanding of, for example, the climate dynamics. It's very hard to think about modeling these risks without having a good understanding of both the dynamics of the climate, but also the interactions with the economy. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that any of us is a climate scientist. We're all trying to learn as we go. So I think everyone is doing their background work, you know, in parallel as we're working on the finance side.
There are resources out there, and the most important one is the IPCC, which provides us with all the analysis, forecasts by all the climate scientists around the world. And yes, we do need to study what the IPCC writes. We need to be aware of it. Yes, I agree with Stefano, not enough effort is put out there in reading and studying the IPCC. Mind you, the IPCC, if you've ever had a look at some of their reports, it's very hard to read. So you yes. know, I could see how people get put off by it.
Yeah.
But they have very good executive summaries.
Mm-hmm. Viral, how important do you think it is to understand the knowledge that is becoming more clear in climate science, that there are climate tipping points where all of a sudden you can get in a disproportionate way that the temperature shoots up and the climate deteriorates? Are these type of nonlinearities sufficiently captured and understood in how assets are priced and how finance scholars think about the issue?
You know, when I first started reading the finance literature, and I think I would be critical even of my own first round of papers, there was a tendency to think about each of these risks in isolation. And then as I read climate scientists more and more, I realized that they're never talking about these risks in isolation. So recently I read a wonderful book by Professor Kerry Emanuel from MIT called What Do We Know About Climate Change? It's a beautiful, short, 70-page book. You can read it before you go to sleep tonight if you want. He's never talking about all these different aspects of climate change in an isolated manner. Heat risk, drought risk, sea level rise risk. He really has a view that basically this is something that's happening collectively to the planet as a whole. There are many moving parts, but in a way, many of these things are correlated. Maybe clustering of risks is important. I think we are not thinking as hard in finance about compound climate risks, which is, do these things happen together on average? If you think about what happened in the island in Maui, that is exactly what happened. High temperatures and hurricane winds happen at the same time. And I think it was the compounding of the risks, as you said, created a very nonlinear outcome, not to mention the loss of human lives. When you talk to climate scientists about price formation, both in financial markets, in energy markets, when you think about the role of finance, as Patrick was mentioning, in facilitating the transition, they've also realized that they have a very simplistic view about how the transition is going to happen. Mm. They think about it as just bringing the emissions down to a certain level, just achieved relatively simply through a carbon tax. And of course, all that is true, but there's a whole host of changes which are taking place along the way. And companies are doing a lot of things on their own. I was recently talking to a private equity company, and they are developing in-house expertise on how companies can adapt, trying to put someone in as a board member on their largest companies to help them design these strategies. And so I certainly find every time I learn about climate science, it puts me in a slightly different direction on my research path. But I think sometimes I feel they're also somewhat less aware of the financing aspects of the transition. And so I think a back and forth would be very valuable for both communities, in my view.
So what are the big debates taking place around how to actually get the transition going?
I'm not sure one can really just talk about debates with relatively clear lines, you know, separating people's views. I think what's important in this area is to recognize that we haven't yet come to grips with the challenge. Also, circling back to the previous question, the climate solution lies in the social sciences. It doesn't lie in the climate science, because it's humanity, it's our economies that are responsible for climate change. It's how we behave, how we produce, what our goals are, how we organize society. All of that needs to change if we're going to get to grips with the climate crisis. We're not there yet understanding what the challenge is. We, society as a whole, and us the small community of climate finance researchers. Now, if we are to talk about debates, in the narrow view of the role of finance and what financial markets have done to respond to the rising threat of climate change, there has been a debate between those who believe that you can do well by doing good and those who believe that that's not possible. There's no free lunch. We are all trained as economists and we ought to be naturally in the camp of there's no free lunch.
Yeah.
However, the finance industry has embraced doing well by doing good for good reasons, because that's how you pitch your investment strategy to your clients. But that's fundamentally problematic if you're only pitching that. I'm sure there are opportunities that are out there. If you're early on, if you're early in the game, you can do well by doing good, but you cannot do that in aggregate. And in aggregate, addressing the climate change problem involves facing huge costs and being prepared to pay them, but doing this in hopefully in an orderly and efficient way.
Firal, what are the big debates that you think climate finance should be about in your research area?
I'm thinking currently that there are three gaps. One, I'm interested in thinking about the systemic risk to the financial sector. I think broadly so far, the literature seems to be reaching the conclusion that in isolation, like individual physical risks or thinking about transition risks in a narrow sense, right now these don't seem to be of material concern to the financial sector. I'm a little less convinced about it for the following reason, and I would personally like more research to be done, which is that physical risks are happening in a compounded manner, in my view. So conditional on a hurricane, actually several other physical risks are far more likely to happen than otherwise. Sometimes they happen together, sometimes because it's a common climatic pattern that's driving it, they may happen together over the next 6 to 12 months. So I'm very curious to understand both from a financial stability, pricing of risk, as well as just the physical description of the risk themselves, which is what is the compound climate risk patterns that one observes in data? And if the underlying climate change risk is rising over time because of growth of emissions at a faster pace than expected, has simultaneously the compounding of climate risks also been rising over time? I think it's understudied and I'm keen to see more being done on it. I think we need to think hard about inflation and climate change, in my view. What does climate change mean for food prices? What does it mean for energy prices? Not necessarily in the very long term, but at the horizons at which portfolio optimization occurs, the horizon at which central banks make decisions about inflation and output trade-offs, etc. And I think this requires thinking hard about corporate responses, regional responses in agriculture and its productivity. It requires thinking about what kind of supply is getting created for energy provision at what pace and what vulnerability it creates to the kind of shocks we have seen over the last few years. So a part of the central banking discussion around climate change is always about financial stability. In my view, there is something more that is first order, which is the impact on inflation and perhaps also on potential output, as I hinted earlier. So I'm curious to see work that thinks about supply side shocks that can come about through climate to food and fuel prices, and through that generalize into inflation in some way. I think we need to do a little bit more work on that. And lastly, we need to understand a lot more about corporate efforts, in my view. Of course, as climate scientists, they go straight towards bringing emissions down to a certain level, and they think about it in a very kind of, I would say, reduced form way from then on. As Patrick just mentioned, ultimately, though, that policy has to be embraced by the society, which includes corporations, financial sector, the governments, and households. I think the corporates are a key piece of it. They could potentially be the largest contributors to adverse climate change, and simultaneously, therefore, also be the biggest agents or the mechanisms through which we could address climate change well. So I'm very curious to document at a micro level, what are they doing? At what pace is corporate response to climate change happening? which agents are having what role in terms of ESG-affiliated mutual funds, private equity, and their interventions in boards of companies, their net zero commitments, and how they are actually delivering on these. There are some data sets which are out there, like the CDP survey-based data. But I wonder if through improvements in SEC and other exchange-mandated disclosures, we can actually start producing and analyzing a better data set of private responses to climate change, where we think investments in mitigation and adaptation are too low and where they are satisfactory, because then it'll give us a sense of where might public policy have the biggest bite in corporate interventions.
Stefano, the specific question I would like to ask you is, are finance scholars doing enough to understand the interactions between climate and nature?
I think that there are several very important questions that we have not been able to address fully, and they are very important when you think about what the financial sector is doing, but also how do we set optimal policy. We have been documenting many channels through which the financial sector can help a transition. You know, there's a pressure on financial markets that affects the cost of capital. There's engagement and impact investing. I think we don't have a very good understanding yet of what is the most efficient way to proceed. And that's simply because there's not been enough empirical work that identifies all the effects properly. But that's a very important question. The entirety of this ESG industry is being based on the idea that, you know, by investing in ESG, or, you know, in particular the climate-focused way, we can move the cost of capital, and this is positive effects on the transition. But I think we need to document what is the best, the most efficient way. So that's one, I think, where there's a lot more work to be done. The second, which goes closer to my research, is that ultimately, very often we think of climate finance from the adaptation point of view. A lot of the discussion today has been about how do we fund this green transition, sustainable transition. But there's another side which is very important, which is that whether we're going to act very, very aggressively or not with respect to the transition, there will be some climate risk remaining. And these climate risks are going to have a potentially very large macroeconomic effects. And these effects are going to affect many areas in the world, some particularly badly. I think there's a particular need to think of climate finance as also providing some benefits on the adaptation side, which is basically, how do we manage this risk? How do we share this risk globally, right? Can we make sure that we have a system in place so that if you have a country, for example, that is particularly hit by, let's say, flooding, they have a system that insures them or transfer funds to them to take front to these climate damages. And right now, the markets where this insurance can be traded are very lucky. Derivative markets are very small. There's a little trade. There are a few specialized securities that can be used to hedge this and share this climate risk, but they're very small. And so the question I think that should be investigated is, how do we make these markets work better? Maybe there's a role for governments to promote some of these markets. I'm going to answer your question about nature in 1 second, but first I wanted to go back to your question on nonlinearities, which I think points to an important problem, which is that there has been a lot of climate macro work in understanding theoretically how these dynamics will evolve over time, how the dynamics of the climate relate to the macroeconomy. And then on the side, there's been a lot of very reduced form work in, you can call it empirical climate finance, understanding kind of risk pricing. But the connection between these two is actually very weak. Like, we don't have a very good way right now to link all these interesting results about what kind of risks investors care about with all this macro modeling, which involves all these complex dynamics and nonlinearities. And I think a lot more work should be done in trying to link the theory with the empirics. This is something that in standard finance, we work for decades on this, right? To better link the models with the data. I think that's the frontier of what needs to be done in finance. And then going back to your question about nature, as we talked about, I've been working on biodiversity risk, which is one of the ways that there's an interaction between the natural environment and the climate risks. And of course, the two are not the same, right? Biodiversity relates to the diversity of, let's say, species in nature. It's affected by the climate because climate damage can disrupt ecosystems, for example, and vice versa, a well-working ecosystem can protect us against the damages from climate change. Ultimately, climate is one of the risks that impacts planetary health, and planetary health affects mankind in many different ways. There is first order risk that we are facing as humanity, but it's important to understand that, like Viral also was mentioned before, there are interesting compounding problems. And so climate change could actually worsen some of these other connected risks. And ultimately, we as humans, we kind of pay the price of any disruption in all of these environments. And so I think it's important to study them in parallel.
Alisa has also put together a committee to make sure that we talk about the right things and we talk about them with the right guests. You're on the committee as well. What would you suggest that we should be talking about in future episodes
I think what is special about this topic is that, unlike traditional topics in finance and economics, we are studying a non-stationary system. We're studying a system that's changing as we're looking at it. And therefore, it's important for everyone working in this area to be reactive. We have to move away from our traditional thinking in economics and finance that there is a stationary world out there. There isn't. The world is no longer stationary. That has deep implications as a general outlook and framing. I would like the, you know, maybe future guests to be responding to that and how they think about that, how they put that in their analysis. That's for the general point. A more specific point, what I believe is likely to happen, and it affects how we should think about the risk analysis, which is relevant for finance. We are going to delay and procrastinate. Nobody's going to make drastic changes, significant changes at scale.
No.
And we're going to keep doing this until we stop. And we know for sure, that's what the climate scientists tell us.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, this will stop. So we need to think about these tail and jump risks and how people are taking those into account today or not, and how that affects our analysis.
Viral, what's on the agenda for you?
I would like to understand what exactly is happening on climate change initiatives in large emerging markets such as India and China.
Mm.
I think they are very crucial in the end to the overall global emissions pool. And climate change is a planet event in a way. The externality is sort of not localized by country or emerging markets versus advanced economies. It seems it's very important for the transition to happen in an orderly manner, even subject to the natural procrastination that Patrick is concerned about, that we understand what is happening on the ground in India and China, both in terms of their contributions to the climate change, but also the risks they are exposed to, what the public policy and corporations are doing over there. I think we know too little, in my view, about that. One issue I'm quite concerned about is small countries. How are they going to be dealing with climate change? What sort of public arrangements can be made available were they to have a very difficult hazards materialize beyond the tipping point risks that Alyssa and Stefano have mentioned? What efforts are being arranged at a multilateral level to help these countries prepare better, help them deal with these shocks over time? So a little bit more on emerging markets and on small and frontier economies.
There are two things that we didn't really touch upon much today, which I think would be very interesting to follow up on. One is the interaction with politics. We wouldn't be discussing about climate finance at all if it wasn't, or maybe it was a little bit, but if it was easier, if it was a political solution like a carbon tax.
Exactly.
Right? You know, that would be the first best. Okay, there are practical implications which are more complicated, but from a conceptual point of view, one of the reasons why finance really we think has an important role is particularly because, in a sense, the political system is not taking the appropriate action for various constraints. So I think it would be very interesting to investigate more in depth the interaction between finance and politics. And also, you know, things change. For example, as the climate deteriorates and we see maybe the damages are more visible, maybe that will push the politics and the fiscal policies to act on this. And the interaction between the finance and the politics, I think, are important. And the other thing that also was not touched upon today is ultimately there is some possibility that we're going to figure out some technological solution to the climate problem, like geoengineering. And there's a huge question, I think, of not only how do we go about this, doing this R&D, but also how do we fund that, right? It also that interacts with finance. How much money should we invest in trying to fund technologies that could potentially just, you know, for example, capture carbon in a more efficient way and so on? So that's another topic which I think is potentially very important going forward.
I think we've got our work cut out, Alyssa. Thank you very much for your suggestions. But also, if you've been listening to this and you have an idea for something that you want us to cover, just because Alyssa didn't put you on the committee does not mean you do not have a voice. Let us know what you want us to cover and we will do our best to cover that in future episodes. That's all we have time for this week, though.
Thank you to my co-host Tim and to our guests Patrick, Stefano and Viral. We will be back with a new Vox Talks Climate Finance episode soon. Stay tuned!